everyone, G Money here, futurist disruptor ape, and your source for all things NFT. You're tuning into the Cutting Edge podcast, where we discuss the importance of the emerging NFT market with culture's most influential people. Whether you want to know about the next biggest drops or just want to know the basics of where to start, the Cutting Edge can help. If you like what you hear, please rate, review, and subscribe. Hey everyone, welcome to the Cutting Edge podcast where culture meets crypto. Today we have entrepreneur, activist, and philanthropist who gained mainstream recognition with his freedom dividend approach during his 2020 presidential campaign. He is an author of three books, including Forward, Notes on the Future of Our Democracy. He will now be bringing the voice of Web3 to Washington, D.C. with Lobby 3, a DAO built for like-minded thought leaders, innovators, and Web3 enthusiasts to help advance the positive impact of blockchain technology. Please welcome Andrew Yang. Andrew, how are you?
G Money, I'm doing great. Better for being here with you.
First, I just want to say that, you know, you're the son of immigrant parents. So am I. I feel like we really connected on that when we first started speaking, because we've seen that struggle of what it's like to grow up with parents that left everything behind to come here to this country. So I guess a question I have that I'm sure a couple of people will have is, like, how did your upbringing, like, really like shape how you view the world and why you're approaching the political spectrum the way you have?
Oh, thanks, man. I feel like you and I do share a lot in common. And if you're born the son of immigrants, you, one, take nothing for granted, because my parents were always scaring the shit out of me.
I bet that happened to you. Still scare the shit out of me, so I get it.
So one, there's that. But the other thing is that feel like you're going to have to do it yourself. You know what I mean? Like there's not much else going on. And your parents have already been through so much coming from far off country to the States. You know, for me, my parents, English was very much their second language. So there was a lot of adversity baked in, and you feel like you have to make a name, build yourself. I mean, you represent this too. I mean, you're an entrepreneur who's done like a whole range of things. My zeal led me to run for president in 2020, which is a highly unusual decision. but that decision was born out of an entrepreneurial spirit where I thought my country had a major, major problem in that it didn't understand the fourth industrial revolution and that AI and automation were displacing tons of jobs, which is, in my view, one of the main drivers of Trump's election in 2016. I think people here might have heard me talk about that, but a lot of those manufacturing jobs we automated away were in the Midwest and the swing states that Trump won. So I just saw, okay, big problem. We can't seem to solve it, so let me try and help. And I feel the same way about what we're doing now with Lobby 3, where there's a lot of confusion about Web3 technologies, the impact that they're already having, and certainly the potential impact. It's a big problem. It potentially can be a real hindrance to continued innovation and growth and value creation. And now I've been rattling around the DC scene enough to have a sense as to how we might be able to help.
Right. Yeah. And I guess so for those that aren't very familiar with who you are, I'm sure there aren't many, but can you just give a brief background on, like, you know, what were you doing before you started, before your presidential run? How did you, like, really get interested in politics? Like, what was it that you were doing before that you were like, oh, okay, like, I'm going to put this on the back burner and I'm going to focus on politics? And I think it makes sense, right? Because I do think that I agree with a lot of the things you say. And I also feel like we kind of need to make politicians younger, right? Like, they're...
Stick them in the founder youth. So the numbers indicate you're onto something. The average member of Congress is 59. The average senator is 64. And that's the average. So you're looking at the leadership being generally 10, 15, 20 years older than that. It's one reason why we're so behind on technology generally, much less Web3. What I was doing prior to running for president was, I'll backtrack a little bit more. So, you know, grow up, son of immigrants. So they say, just get a good job, get good grades, try, be stable. So I tried that for 5 months. I was an attorney at a law firm for 5 months and then left to start a dot-com that flopped in the first bubble. So I'm old enough to remember the first dot-com bubble. Worked at several tech startups that had very mixed results to negative results. And then became the CEO of an education company that grew to become number one in the US and was bought by a public company in 2009. So that was like the big feather in my cap. And at this point, my career took a left turn because I became fixated on this idea that America was not cultivating or supporting enough entrepreneurs and that we were instead turning a lot of people into bankers, consultants, lawyers, and the like. And I thought that was shitty, honestly. So I spent 6+ years running a nonprofit that I'd started called Venture for America that tried to channel ambitious, enterprising young people to startups in Detroit, Cleveland, New Orleans, St. Louis, Baltimore, Birmingham, and cities like that. So I spent 6 years traveling the Midwest and the South talking to startup heads and public officials, which is why I became convinced that people didn't understand what was going on in a lot of these communities. And when I visited, it was wild. I was visiting with like some of the, frankly, the most like witted, enterprising people in these cities. But then you'd look around and be like, wow, you know, you are not the norm. The stuff I'm used to is far from the norm. So deciding to run for president was kind of an extension of a decision I'd made years earlier around cultivating entrepreneurship. I, you know, hats off to my wife for being with me through all this stuff, because when she and I got together, I was a pretty normal business dude. And then I became a nonprofit dude and she put up with that. And then I went political, which was, you know, bananas. So that's what I was doing up to that point. One thing led to another, you know. It's like, I never imagined myself as a political figure, because it sucks. And I, you know, I consider myself a problem solver and entrepreneur first and foremost.
Right. No. And that makes total sense. I think, you and I think everything that you said that your parents told you were things that I always heard growing up as well. So I think we have the same worldview that our parents kind of shaped for us from a really young age. And running for politics is something I would have never imagined when I was a kid. But now it's like, oh, I understand the importance of having the right political leaders in place. Not that I don't think I'd ever be a politician personally, but I'll never say never. But
never say never, brother. But to your point about it getting younger, we need it in the worst way. I mean, the fact is, you can have like DC feels like it's on a, you know, 20 to 30 year tape delay, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and it is. and the question is, how do you change that? One of the things that I'm now championing is term limits, because, you know, you go to DC, get some stuff done, and then go home. You know, 3/4 of Americans agree with that.
Right. Right. No, I think it's super valuable and super important, because, again, to your point, is we have people that don't even understand technology, the technology that's like burgeoning and will be the seeds of the fourth industrial revolution, trying to legislate it. Right. And that doesn't really make sense. You need people that actually understand what's happening in order to come up with the right regulatory framework for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, you know, we're going to try and help them. But in an ideal world, you'd have a very different type of leader.
Right. Yeah, no. And so how did running for president change your understanding of how politics work?
I wrote a book that came out a few months ago called Forward that tried to unpack my learnings, because I came off the trail, gee, and I was like, what the heck did I learn? You know, so, you know, so I tried to lay out the goods and bads. Unfortunately, there are more bads than good, where you have first the political landscape that discourages outsiders or innovators from running. And then you have a media landscape that will very consistently favor certain types of candidates over others. You have a hyper polarized political environment where, you know, if one side says it's up, the other side says it's down, regardless of what the, you know, what the truth of the matter is. Mm-hmm. So that things are bifurcating in a really dangerous way. And it's being reinforced by both the media environment and social media, where our public consciousness is being splintered. I think it's one reason why Web3 technologies can be so interesting and powerful, is that they can represent a new form of governance. Because we can kind of tell that our current political institutions and our creaky bureaucracies aren't really with it, or built for this era. It's one reason why I'm so excited for Lobby 3 DAO to be a DAO, because what more beautiful way to demonstrate the potential of these technologies than to implement them in a way that will hopefully demonstrate to the folks in DC that these tools can be very, very powerful and beneficial.
Right. Yeah, no, and I agree with that. I think that trying to help people come together, as opposed to your point, is like splitting up and becoming more extreme. Like, to me, that just, like, if you want to build a country, right, and like, you want to unify people, you don't want to separate them, right? Like, you don't want to have these warring factions within the country. You want to be like, hey, these are the values that we agree with. How do we build upon those values that we agree with in the best way that most people or almost all people can agree with it? So,
You know, one of the fun things too, man, is I've been talking to leaders like you in the Web3 landscape, and people are very, very politically diverse. You know, they're all over the map, but they have a number of principles and visions and aspirations for the future that they share very much in common. And it's quite lovely. You know what I mean? I think that that's what the country and the world needs, because right now, both political figures and media organizations, and certainly social media figures, benefit from trying to pit us against each other. Right. And that is in many ways the opposite of the ethos of Web3, because there's a lot of collaboration and collegiality that infuses this community. It's been really wonderful.
Right. No, and I agree with you. It's really interesting on social media, because like, you're kind of incentivized to be divisive, right? Because that's where you get the most engagement. That's where you get the most likes and all that stuff. I think like my most engaging post was like my most divisive post ever, which is like terrible, because like, I don't want to be that person. Like I'm very much of like here's the
algorithm will reward you. Like the more inflammatory you get, the more they're like, ooh, people are into this. And then it just pushes you in a direction over time.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I've been very conscious of not going down that route, of not, you know, like if I disagree with somebody, you know, I've always had the thought myself is like, you know, if I have something nice to say, if I don't have something nice to say, it's better to just keep it to myself, right?
Like, sounds like an immigrant parent whispered that in your ear at some point. But, you know, the other thing about you too is that you're highly, highly numbers driven. You know, so you're like looking at the math and trying to figure out, you know, what it's saying about the future.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And so I guess a question I have is, when did you first hear about crypto and what were your initial thoughts?
I first heard about crypto when I was running for president, and some of the very first people I got enthusiastic about Yang 2020 were friends in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency communities. I attended a couple of conferences and was blown away by the support. It was Consensus, Blockchain for Good, a couple of the places I went. And I thought, holy cow, like these people get it at a totally different level. And I tried to figure out why it was. And I concluded that it was because they were so optimistic and forward-thinking and interested in building tools for the future. And so many of them also had personally seen their economic circumstances change, that in my estimation, 80 to 90% of them were for some version of the freedom dividend or basic income or something. And so it was just such a perfect fit. And that remains true to this day. Like some of my staunchest supporters are from the cryptocurrency community. And so this is in some ways a chance for me to give back. But I've been communing with people, including some family members of mine, frankly, not for that long. I was running for president starting in 2018. So I'd say like this relationship began in 2018. Because when you're out there putting out a message, and then a particular community embraces that message at a much higher level, then you very much gravitate towards that. And they're like, oh, wow, you know, like these people get it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things about crypto has been it kind of allows you at some point, and I think it happens at a different point for everybody, and I can't pinpoint when it happened for me. But at some point, I went from this scarcity mindset that we're all born with, I think, as humans, right? It's just like in order for you to eat, somebody has to starve. Type of mentality that has been part of like the human experience for thousands of years to this abundance mindset, right?
Yep.
And under that abundance mindset, it's not so much of, hey, like, how can I take, but it's more, how can I give? And I think that that's something that for one reason or another in crypto has really flourished, right? Which is why I think a lot of people have really resonated with your message. And, you know, I just, yeah, what were your thoughts on that, I guess?
Oh, I completely agree. Like the mindset of abundance is so powerful in Web3. I just had this joking equation come into my mind, but it's 1 + 1 = 3. You know what I mean? Where you don't have the zero sum mentality. You don't have like, well, if you win, I lose. It's like maybe you can win and I can win. Which is certainly a philosophy that drives me every single day. It's been a learning for me, where in politics, a lot of people are zero sum. I find it really frustrating. It's like, and I'm going to suggest that this is actually something that right now is facing Web3, which is people fear that if Web3 flourishes, then it's going to somehow mean very bad things for, let's say, a traditional financial system or whatever it happens to be. And that's something that we have to remedy. Like one of the conversations I had yesterday was with a former CTO of a blockchain company where the blockchain is being used to secure patient medical records over hundreds of medical facilities in a way that's really seamless and tampering proof and secure. People don't think about that when they think about Web3, but our argument is maybe they should.
Right. Yeah, no, and there's a need for it, right? Because it's like over time is like, as you know, we all sign the confidentiality agreements, right? But then that doctor holds on to our paperwork or our medical records until we need to go send it to somebody else. It's like, if it's my data, I should be holding on to it and I disclose it to whom I choose to, right? And so I definitely think that there will definitely be that system in place long term. It's just going to take time to get there, I think.
Yeah, but this is an example of something that is a win for patients, a win for providers. The only person who loses is maybe some traditional electronic medical record company, but who's looking out for that? There are things that can really improve people's lives, and that's the kind of case that needs to be made more broadly, because right now there are caricatures of the use cases of Web3 that are like much less broadly beneficial, I'd say, or paint a picture that that I don't think is accurate, truly.
Right. Yeah. And I just wanted to touch a little bit on the UBI because I know you're a proponent for it. And I'm sure as you've seen, there's been like, you know, crypto has its own kind of like little UBI with airdrops, retroactive airdrops, and all this stuff is, you know, what are your thoughts, I guess, on crypto, UBI, the meshing of those? I'm sure you've thought about that. I just would love to hear like what your thoughts are.
Oh yeah, I think digital currencies can be a massive tool to combat poverty. It's one reason I'm so excited about Lobby 3 because I want to tap into that potential. I'm going to give an example that is very local. So here in New York City, where you're from, I moved here when I was 21, so it's one reason I'm laughing. Certain schools have fundraisers where parents have to buy $1,000 in like a school voucher that can only be used at certain local businesses. And so you use it at the local businesses, then the local businesses then return 20% of the value to the school. So it's like a fundraiser for the school. It drives patronage to local businesses. Like that's the kind of thing that can be done really powerfully with digital currencies, with crypto, with smart money. Mark Cuban during COVID said we should be sending people money that can only be spent at local businesses. The most practical way to do that would have been using digital currencies. So there are really powerful applications that we're just scratching the surface of that I think can help address poverty and people getting what they need, but also local economies in a way that is fundamental to reversing some of the things we're seeing. Because right now you have let's call it Amazon or certain tech companies that are just acting as almost vacuums. They're like just soaking up the energy from that retail district in that town's the town square or whatnot. There has to be a way to put buying power into people's hands that has multiple benefits. And digital currencies strike me as the most obvious way to do that. So it's something I want to see adopted in more places so we can show what this can do.
Right. Yeah. And to your point is, I remember when those checks were being cut out, the stimulus checks to everyone that were headed out, like there was a few week delay, right? Because the checks were, you know, some I think were sent out in wires, but most of them were sent out by checks. It's like, imagine if everybody had like a digital currency wallet that could be funded, you know, within 6 hours, let's say, of the bill being signed, right? Like how much faster that could have boosted the economy.
Oh yeah, it's timing, it's transparency, it's trust, because our current systems aren't designed for this at all. Those checks were distributed through the IRS. So that was the most practical thing the government could do. And, you know, it was the right thing given the context. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that don't file taxes. So what happened to them? They didn't get anything. Mm-hmm. And people forget about them because, they tend to live in the shadows. Canada and in certain countries in the developing world, frankly, did something different where they tried to set up a digital payment system. Didn't go through their taxpayer infrastructure. So you could have done it potentially faster, more broadly, more effectively in a way that monitored whether someone is even aware they get it. I mean, there are a lot of things that you could do to improve the system. It's just right now, no one believes that our federal government is capable of these things because we're just so used to it being kind of a stodgy entity. But I'd love to help change that, really. You know, I mean, like a poll just came out today about, you know, people's low faith in our government. And it's circular in a negative way. It's like if government uses antiquated systems or has very low accountability or transparency, then we're like, yeah, like, you know, let's just try and work around it. So, you know, the goal has to be that we get these technologies operating at up to their potential and maybe even have the government be able to be one of like the users or beneficiaries.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I know you touched on this a little bit just in the last few minutes, but how else do you see blockchain technology changing grassroots politics and community advocacy?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. When you and I were in ETH Denver and I addressed the crowd, and I just imagined that most of them disliked politics, saw it as inefficient and irrational and argumentative. And most people nodded because that's what most people think. And I'm going to say again that a lot of that stuff's kind of the opposite of Web3, where Web3 is really like efficient and you iterate quickly and it's rational and team-based and a bunch of other things, very, very community-based. So there's something of an allergy or aversion to politics that I completely get. And I don't even disagree with it, you know, because in some ways it's a bad way to spend your bandwidth or invest yourself emotionally. In a way, what we're doing here is we're trying to make it so it's positive, practical, impactful for people to get involved in a way that you'd be excited about. You know, you join this DAO, you buy an NFT, maybe the NFT even goes up in value, and we build a vibrant movement that can help people understand what these technologies can do to improve lives. So I understand when people are hesitant or resistant to politics, because that's in many ways a very rational stance.
Right. Yeah. And I get that. I think that makes total sense. And I think kind of creating that easy on-ramp for people to start understanding it, right? Because I think that was probably the genesis of our first conversation, right? Is like, how can we get people in crypto who understand the importance of working with regulators to also like to have a seat at the table, as opposed to sit there kind of waiting for regulations to pass that they have really no voice in helping create.
Yeah, that's exactly the wrong equation, you know, like no one wants to just be like doing your thing, eating your meal, and then all of a sudden some rules get announced. like that. You know, that's not cool. There's so much energy and ingenuity and resources that can be brought to bear. I mean, there are other there are other communities that have matured and interfaced more effectively with some of the rules makers. And there's no reason we can't borrow a page from that book.
Right. And so I guess this is a great time to start getting into Lobby3 DAO. So what is it exactly? What's its purpose? And how is the DAO going to work with regards to the membership tokens and a broad overview of it?
Of course, Lobby3 DAO it will be a vibrant community of community members and activists and people that want to learn, who also want to educate folks in DC about what these technologies can do. And the way it works is you mint a token, become part of the DAO, and then it operates just like the other DAOs people are associated with. So when people ask me about, you know, the priorities and mission, I'll be like, well, it's going to be largely up to the community. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to say that of the resources, the bulk are going to go to advocacy organizations that are doing the kind of DC tango. like they wear suits and ties and they go to big impersonal offices and they, you know, have conversations and they so that stuff will be going on. But there'll also be treasuring in the DAO where we can, or you can make decisions about what community to adopt an anti-poverty pilot in, what kind of messaging campaign might be attractive or desirable for certain lawmakers' district or something, you know, like whatever the community decides will be most effective. So it should be a lot of fun. This is very much real time in the sense that as we speak, there are various policymakers and lawmakers that are just starting to wake up to Web3 and they're being asked, hey, where do you stand on these rules or this approach? And most of them don't know. you know, the primary emotion we get from the people in DC is confusion. And that's not a knock. That's just, you know, like fact. And there are probably people here who get the same response from their relatives or friends or whatever. So this DAO is going to be an initiative to help dispel that confusion in positive ways.
Right. That makes total sense. And so what are there are three tiers, correct?
Yeah. So we want to make it very accessible. Tier one is 0.07 ETH. It's time bound, so you can minimize gas fees and there's no quantity limit. We want anyone who wants to be a part of this community to be able to participate and help educate and broaden awareness. And then there's a higher tier, tier two, where you get a bit more visibility. The cost is a bit higher. And then there's tier three, which is for individuals who want to be kind of leading the charge, honestly, who are investing higher levels of resources, generally including their time, where they'll liaise with the advocacy organization we partner with, and most likely with lawmakers and regulators themselves. So that's going to be fascinating. Some of those meetings will be held virtually in a way that members of the DAO all will be able to participate in. So you can imagine like a panel or a round table with a member of Congress and then a leader from Web3 and then questions from the audience. So this should be a lot of fun. If fun also includes trying to make sure that people understand what these technologies can do, which I find fun.
Right. Yeah. And so how do you expect Lobby3 to differentiate itself from other lobbying groups in DC?
Well, so I'd see this as a popular movement to educate people on what these technologies can do to fight poverty, really. You know, it's a very different angle and approach than an organization that might represent a set of companies or a set of interests. Like we want to be a voice for people, and those people happen to be people that are energized and using some of these technologies every day. But it's I think, going to be a more effective and impactful approach because a lot of these people are constituents of some of the folks in DC in a way that I suspect right now members of Congress aren't even aware of. Like they're not aware that there are thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people in their community who really care deeply about this set of policies. And if they understand that, then I think that their stance could change.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. And I know we're recording this before the actual NFT sale. And I know this will be coming out afterwards. But going into it, how much money do you expect to raise from it? And how do you plan on using those funds?
Well, gosh, G Money, just like you to cut to, you know, the dollar amounts. You know, in order to be effective and impactful, we would need to raise certainly multiple millions. Like I'm someone who thinks you can get a lot done in ways that don't necessarily cost a lot of money, but this is an area where if you have resources, you're just going to be more effective. You're going to be able to build different kinds of pilots or campaigns. So we're trying to raise a significant amount. I think we will, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited too. I think anybody that spends just a couple minutes with you understands just how truly genuine and authentic you are, and you know what you're actually trying to do. I think is really.
I'm just trying to eradicate poverty, G Money. You know, it's like poverty is stupid. Poverty is unnecessary, and you know, I think a lot of people listening to this agree that Web3 can help. So you know, like that's what I'm all about.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen it firsthand, right? With specifically with creators and artists, you know, you see it across the spectrum where people come into the space, and they've been able, you know, it's not like it's a free handout, right? Like everything requires work as well, and inputting stuff yourself and wanting to do the work. But just having that opportunity that otherwise wouldn't be available if you grew up in, you know, some part of the world that didn't give you the opportunity, or in inner city or whatever it is. So I very much agree with the mission.
Lives are being transformed. You know it. You see it every day. The people know it. We just have to let DC know it.
Right. Yeah. And so I guess at which stage do you anticipate you'll need the most community support, membership support? Is it just right out of the gate, or will there be, I guess, more involvement around the DAO as it grows long term?
Well, this is going to be the fun part. So certainly would love people's help very early on during this minting process, so we can show that we're going to build a very vibrant, active community. And then I'm sure that the community will be called upon during crunch time in the days and weeks to come. So what is crunch time? Crunch time is when they start floating various rules, honestly. So a lot of the time, these agencies, they don't just come out. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll just be like, here are the rules. And then, but what happened earlier is that during the infrastructure package, they issued some rules that didn't make a ton of sense, honestly. they got a bit of pushback and egg on their face. And so this time, I'm fairly confident that the rules are going to get floated and put out for comment and review. So that's going to be crunch time, when Lobby 3 DAO is going to be like, okay, guys, here's what they're proposing. Here's what makes good sense about it. Here's something that they really could use a bit more information on, and let's deliver information in different ways, you know, like and it could be creative even. So that's going to be, I think, the time when I'm most excited about this community that we're building, is when the period for comment gets kicked off.
Right. And I think that's one of those super important things that I think people, the more time you spend in Web3, the more you realize that, like, it doesn't matter how big or small of a member financially you are of a community. If you're a member of that community, you obviously agree with a lot of their values, and you're going to fight for those values so that when those comment periods come up, and I think I've seen it a bunch in the past where, you know, the government asks for some sort of commentary on some rule or law that's passing, and you start, you know, people on Twitter post like, hey, like, write something, this is the link, you know, write your thoughts, let them be known. And that's where it starts to become very vocal. But I what I really love about what you're focusing on is, like, how can we start being vocal before that point, right? Before they're just asking for commentary. How can we have a seat at the table when they're starting to draft that law or draft those regulations that will ultimately come?
Yeah, or even how can we be more strategically effective than having like a fairly last minute letter writing campaign, which I'd imagine will happen regardless. So what else can we do? Like, are there ways that we can influence decision makers, but before the fact, during the fact, that's a little bit more thought out or subtle in some cases? So it's going to be fun. But yeah, like that is this movement. And I agree with you. In so many of these communities, and I think people know this, it's a little bit like school, where if someone invests more time and energy in like a project or a club, then they end up kind of running the thing. I'm sure the DAO is going to be similar, where like if you decide to invest time and energy, then all of a sudden you're going to be like, one of the more prominent voices. And the folks that I've already connected with in the Discord, so thoughtful, so insightful, so caring. Like, this is going to be great because I've already seen it. Like, if you get early adopters who are thinking about it on a like a very high level, which some of the folks who are already members of the community are, the sky's the limit.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things to your point about just getting really thoughtful comments from people in the Discord is the one thing that I really love about crypto is how much of a difference you can make as an individual without necessarily having to be like very powerful, rich, or influential. Right. Is like, yeah. You know, I popped into Discords and I love it too, especially when I was starting out, is I can go in there and get into, and I had done this multiple times when I first got into the space, was I would kind of go in there and I'd challenge the founders on like their mechanism and their protocol. I'm like, oh, this doesn't work. And, you know, we'd have like a heated discussion on it. And I specifically remember one time where like I went, I didn't think it would work. I tried it out in real time. And then I came back and I was like, oh, you know, I apologized. It was definitely my mistake. But the coolest thing about it was that I was able to have a voice, and it didn't matter that, you know, how much of the stock I owned or, you know, the token that I owned or whatever. It's like everybody has that voice, which I think is super powerful.
Yeah, it's very inclusive. It's very merit-based. It's very much based upon what you're bringing to the table and whether, you know, your ideas are good or whether your creativity is manifest. I'm going to suggest that in some ways, it's a little bit like the opposite of our interactions with the government, where a lot of people feel like, hey, my voice doesn't really matter. Right. You know, it's one reason why Web3 is so magical for a lot of people. And, you know, we want that magic to grow, not be hamstrung by people that, you know, may not understand it.
Right. Yeah. And that makes total sense. Outside of voting, how do you think everyday citizens can make a difference in politics in trying to help shape a better tomorrow?
Oh, my gosh. This is what I concluded after writing my book, which is that right now our political system is not set up to succeed at all. You know, it's set up to divide us, to blame the other side. And even if you're much more sympathetic to one side or the other, like this, the system isn't set up right. You know, I think this is actually very resonant with folks in Web3 because we're all about systems and incentives and mechanics. So I can go through it very briefly, but right now the approval rate of U.S. Congress is 28%. The re-election rate for individual members is 94%. So then you're like, well, why is that disconnect? And it turns out that about 90% of the districts are non-competitive. They're either very blue or very red. So anyone who's in office just wants to avoid getting primaried, which means that they end up hewing more to an extreme. It's a little bit like that social media mechanic you described, right. but for our elected leaders. So if you wanted to try and fix the system structurally, what you'd want to do is do away with party primaries, replace it with nonpartisan open primaries, and then have anyone be able to participate from any party and use ranked choice voting to determine who wins. So then there's no spoiler effect. You disincentivize negative campaigning. So this combination of reforms is a giant incentive fix. And I'm happy to say that there are actually 25 states that allow you to change those processes via ballot initiative. So I started the Forward Party to make those changes. So if you think that the system itself needs to be changed, go to forwardparty.com and you can see what we're doing. But that's my shot at trying to fix democracy for the long haul, because like this two-party system, it makes no sense. People who are listening to this or watching it, probably a lot of them are from around the world. And I guarantee you that wherever you're from, there aren't two parties, because it's really, really poor design. it's a really, really dumb setup.
Right.
And our founding fathers agreed. Like, there's not a word about political parties in the Constitution. John Adams said two parties would be a great evil. And we're going to witness, unfortunately, the consequences of the worst design failure in the history of the world in the coming months. If we haven't already been witnessing it, I mean, we have been over the last number of years. So 57% of people want to move on from the duopoly, but they keep being told that that's not possible. But I think a lot of folks in Web3 know that all things are possible, or great things are possible.
Right. Yeah, no. And to your point is, I think the really interesting thing is like, I and maybe it's just the people I surround myself with, but I feel like everybody's more towards the center of, let's say, the political spectrum. You know, there's probably, you know, some left leaning, some right leaning. obviously there, but it's not as extreme as it is on like the national scale because of the reasons that you said, right? Is that if you have to win within your political party first, then you're obviously going to be more extreme.
Yeah, you know, that bears out with the folks I met, man. I mean, like, you can like have certain philosophies or beliefs, but like most people just want to build things, want to make things better, want to innovate. And it reminds me a bit of my time running a small private company, which is when you're in that environment, you tend not to be super ideological. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because your business will tell you what it needs, and then you just try and give it what it needs. And right. I think that actually is very much the ethos of Web3, where like you're just like, hey, let's build the future. And then I'm getting signs every single day of like, you know, what people enjoy, what the future, wants.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's super important, right? And I see that, you see that a ton in Web3, where there'll be a team that has like the original idea. And then, you know, I talk to them 2-3 months later and they're like, oh yeah, we pivoted because X, Y, and Z. And I think you need that, right? And I think is really like, and startups in general, right? Like any entrepreneur will tell you that part of their success is the fact that they listened to the market and pivoted when they felt they needed to.
Whereas in politics, someone would be like, you flip-flopped 3 months later, cast you out. You're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Right?
Like new data has shown itself, and that's why you change your mind, right? That's what a logical human being you think would do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the foundation of the Forward Party. Is like, look, let's just make decisions based upon data and numbers. And so we can have conversations about, like, you know, what your goals are. But like, as long as we have what we call it is fact-based governance. And unfortunately, that stuff's really getting lost today, where you know, you can put something out there and like no one really measures whether it worked or didn't work.
Right. Right. I totally agree with that. And so do you have any recommendations? I know you're, you know, you're really diving into the space now. What recommendations can you share on how the crypto Web3 community can support helping to amplify the advantages of this new technology?
Yeah. So there are a couple of big steps that we need to take. Number one is we have to show what these technologies can do in the real world for real people, maybe even real people that don't know what Bitcoin is, so that's step one. And then step two is we have to tell those stories, or we have to tell the stories of the artists whose lives have been transformed, of the patients that now have secure access to their own data, of a community that may have access to financial tools that they didn't have before. It's like these things are happening, but those stories are not being told. You know what stories are being told? Scammers, like illicit deals, nefarious actors, those stories are being told. And we know that that's a very small proportion of the activity. So let's translate some of this energy to folks who right now aren't necessarily plugged in. And let's do a better job of getting those stories out there so that perception doesn't get fixed. You know, like we're at a very crucial juncture. I'm diving headlong into this space because I know that there's a ton we can do for millions of people that right now don't imagine that their future includes these technologies, but should.
Right. And I totally agree with you on amplifying like the right stories, right? Because all these stories are happening. And you know, the key is just making sure they get the air that they need, the oxygen that they need. That was part of the reason I started this podcast, right? Is to how can I help creators and founders who are doing really cool and innovative stuff in the space and give them some platform to discuss their ideas, as opposed to hearing just like the negative stuff from like, you know, maybe like mainstream media that has a vested interest in Web3 not proliferating.
Yeah, man. Way to solve your own problems, solve a lot of other people's problems too. Where crypto meets culture, exactly. The cutting edge with G-Money.
Exactly. So, you know, thank you for taking the time. Before we go, one last question. What's your favorite NFT?
My favorite NFT is the one we're building with Lobby 3, where it's going to be a giant image of the National Mall marked by various NFT artists. And then anyone who mints a token can stick your own avatar or your favorite NFT, which would be your avatar. Mm-hmm. So we will figuratively all be visiting Washington together. And I cannot wait to see this mosaic get built over the next number of days. And I'd love for everyone watching and listening to be a part of it.
That's awesome. Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. If people wanted to find out more about what you're working on and your projects, what's the best way for them to stay up to date?
Oh, you can go to Andrew Yang on Twitter. Lobby3DAO is Lobby3D on Twitter. We have our own Discord, obviously. But yeah, let's build a future together. Please do, you know, join me in the metaverse, and then we'll translate that into the real world. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thank you for your time, Andrew. And everybody, thank you for listening in. And we'll see you guys next week.
G-Money sees the future. Very smart guy.